off the world's largest creek. And I'm going to start off with a little bit of a quiz. I'm Margaret Flowers, and I'm co-director of It's Our Economy, and also one of the organizers of Q2, popularresistance.org, which is involved in the public TPP campaign. So here's the quiz. TPP. How many people think it stands for Total Planetary Power? I'm trading away people's lives and the planet's future. Terrible plutocratic plan. Toilet paper plus?
Yeah.
That's the only one that actually doesn't stand for, but that's what we call our campaign. Flush the TPP, because it's a lot easier to remember toilet paper plus. And I did that. So we're going to start out by telling you a little bit about what we know about what's in the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And then we have Dave Doobie, who's the past president of the Wisconsin State AFL-CIO. And is the current, what would you call yourself, the director?
President of Wisconsin Fair Trade.
There you go, president on the higher level. Right. So we'll talk about what's in the trade agreement, more than a trade agreement. And then Kevin Deese and I will talk a little bit about our campaign and how we're going to stop.
Margaret, thank you very much. I'm going to leave off. Well, let me just make an announcement first. Does everybody know about the rally tomorrow?
Yes.
12:40. We're leaving from here tomorrow, two blocks up to the square, State Street side. It's going to be a snappy rally from 12:40 to 1:30. Hoping for a great crowd between all participants of this conference. There are a number of people from the Veterans for Peace Convention that are going to join us. Saturday is Farmers Market up on the square, and so we're hoping that a lot of those folks will join. Plus, there's been a lot of emails and ways to try within to start organizing this about 2 weeks ago, something like that. But we're hoping that this will be a good event, and for Wisconsin, it's the first major event that we've had. Which is so important because so few people outside of activists know that the TPP, that the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement even exists. They tongue-tied in one. And that is obviously our first objective, is simply to get the word out that this is being negotiated and what's in it and why we have to stop. So I'm going to start out just with a very brief summary of what we know about this agreement, and then as well as fast track, which is key to what happens with the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and then turn it over to Margaret and Pete to follow up with regard to more detail on the campaign that is being developed against this very, very damaging proposal. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, the negotiations for this began about 2010. So unfortunately, despite election promises made back in 2008, this is President Obama's proposal. And the countries that are involved in negotiations include the United States, Australia, Brunei, Dar es Salaam, Canada, Chile, Japan, Malaysia, Mexico, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, and Vietnam. And there are provisions such that if this agreement actually comes to fruition, that other countries can sign on, but there will not be further negotiation as to the provision of the agreement itself. The stated goal for finishing negotiations had been sometime this fall, but then Japan indicated a desire to join the negotiations. It's going to probably string them out for a while, and I doubt whether they will finish those negotiations until sometime early next year. So, but the point still is that we have very, very little time to do the educational and organizational process we need to stop this this proposal. As with NAFTA, actually, but increasingly with the trade agreements that have been negotiated. The Trans-Pacific Partnership has relatively little to do with actual trade, a great deal to do with the multinational, transnational corporations' agenda for privatization and deregulation. As far as we know, only about 4 of the 29 chapters that are being negotiated actually have to do with trade. In other words, customs duties and regulations of goods crossing borders and so forth and so on. So this is really not about tariffs. It's not about creating more jobs in the United States, although that is certainly the way that this agreement will be sold to us, as has every other trade agreement, international trade agreement. I don't have a slide of this yet, but there's a, if you chart the time when we negotiated a international free trade agreement, with the promises that this is going to increase exports and create jobs in the United States, within a year, year and a half, our trade deficit with that country or those countries has actually increased. So our deficit, in other words, the difference between the value of what we export and what we import is growing, and it's well above $600 billion a year. I think we all understand that the national debt is not a problem that it has been marketed to be, but the trade deficit is a problem that ultimately has got to be solved, because that yearly deficit of $650 some billion in some way has to be made up. In other words, if we are not exporting enough to pay for the imports that are coming into this country, where does that money come from? And basically it's borrowing, it's transfer of wealth to other countries and transnational corporations. It makes it possible for other corporations to increasingly buy aspects of the American economy so that we are losing more and more control over our own economic system. The frustrating thing, too, about these negotiations is that they are basically being held in secrecy. Now, President Obama had promised, I think, before he was first elected in 2008, that in terms of any trade negotiations, that his policy would be transparency, so that people, including Congress and the general public, knew what was happening. These negotiations have been the most secret of any trade negotiations that we've ever had. And it's been extremely frustrating. We don't have copies of what the United States or other countries have actually proposed and put on the table. Almost all the information has come, documents have been leaked. Thank God for whistleblowers and leakers, or we wouldn't know anything about nothing these days. So, but we do have a general idea of the basic outlines of this agreement. There are, in addition to the American negotiators and negotiators from other countries, there are 600 corporate advisors to the negotiators. And they do have free access to most, if not all, of the negotiating documents. There are a few other organizations that are not corporations that have access, or at least some access, but for the most part, it's essentially the dominant multinationals that have access to these documents. Members of Congress really have very little idea of the fact that this is even going on while they're arguing other things. But besides that, in order for them to see the documents and the proposals that are on the table, they have to make an appointment. They are ushered into a sealed room with no windows and so forth. They are not allowed to take pencil, pen, or paper, or any recording device into the room. They can then read the documents. But my understanding, and you guys can correct me on this if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that those documents are classified. And so even after they read them, they can read them, but they can't talk. Taken for us. So the situation we have here really is one which the American public needs to know about. And there are enough of these kinds of horror stories and things that people respond to in terms of the secrecy of the negotiations and what is really going on in terms of what they're talking about. These are things that people, I think, increasingly are willing to pay attention to because they have seen what has happened to our economy, the loss of jobs, good family-supporting jobs as a result of NAFTA and other trade agreements. So we've got possibilities here, but we've really got to get off our butts and get the program going. And Margaret has done a terrific job with the TPP, the Flush TPP campaign, which she will be telling you about, in conjunction with other groups that are fighting the so-called free trade agreements. One question is, why are multinationals so interested in this agreement and other so-called free trade agreements? And we have to recognize, once again, that this has very little to do with tariffs and custom duties. It has a great deal to do with deregulation and privacy. Privatization. It also has a lot to do with lowering labor costs. It sounds fantastic, but there are many multinational corporations that feel that it's getting simply too expensive to produce things in China. Wages are getting out of hand. So Vietnam is the new China because their wages are about one-third of what the wages are in China. And there are other countries, obviously, in the group that I read to you that that also are low-wage countries. So it expands the labor pool that is extremely low-wage. And that has an effect not only in terms of encouraging corporations in first-world countries, such as our own, to export production to these countries, but it also means that, you know, workers who are supposedly getting a decent wage, which is fewer and fewer, are in direct competition with those workers, and so there is a worldwide race to the bottom, pressure to lower wages in all countries, and not only in those countries that already have very low wage scales. So cheaper labor costs are a part of it. Also, and this is relatively little known, but there was a provision in NAFTA, Chapter 11, and it has been strengthened, as far as we know, in the Trans-Pacific Partnership, called investor-to-state lawsuits. These are lawsuits that foreign corporations can file against governments if they pass regulations, standards, laws that reduce the expectation that these corporations had in terms of the level of profits that they would make. They can challenge those in international tribunals. A panel of judges, basically lawyers become judges, out of the World Bank will consider their charges in secret where the governments affected, and it's not only the United States, do not even have a chance to present their own case. And the rulings of these bodies cannot be appealed, and there is no way to challenge their decisions. What they can do is to either fine the level of government, whether it's state, national, or local, or they can allow the offended country to increase tariffs on exports from, say, the United States into the country that the foreign corporation is based in. And what that means is that we have foreign corporations that supersede our own ability to control standards, quality of life, and standard of living in our own country. And it also obviously means that it's difficult for us to improve environmental provisions, worker safety, consumer protection in terms of inspection of food or safety and so forth and so on. Along with this comes corporations' specific interests, and particularly the pharmaceutical companies. They have a major interest in these negotiations, and we don't have definite proof of this, but what they want is to extend the length of time in which they can patent a drug from approximately 12 years to 20 years. Now, that affects us. It affects any of us that takes a generic drug, but it is absolutely disastrous for third world countries, which need inexpensive drugs if they are going to be able to provide any kind of decent health care for their populations. And it looks at this point like pharmaceutical companies may well win that battle. But that's another area where I think we can appeal to the general public to understand what's really going on. One thing, finally, before we turn to our other panelists, is the procedure by which this free trade agreement, like NAFTA, will be considered by Congress. Most certainly under what we used to call fast track, which is a Nixon era invention. They changed the name because it became so unpopular during our mobilization against fast track during the NAFTA negotiations. So they often call it Trade Promotion Authority. close to TPP, TPA. What it basically does is Congress has to pass a law which essentially cedes their constitutional authority to regulate international trade, to cede those powers to the president, allowing the president to choose countries that he or she wishes to negotiate with, for the U.S. trade representative who reports to the president to have he and his other negotiators do these negotiations, increasingly in secret, and to actually sign an agreement once it's agreed upon by the parties in the negotiation. The agreement does not go into effect, however, until it comes back to Congress. Under fast track, however, Congress has very, very limited opportunities to even study the treaty that has been presented to them. And I brought along with me, just for fun, NAFTA in two volumes. This was a law that was passed that implemented the North American Free Trade Agreement, which illustrates, number one, how complicated these agreements are. How many members of Congress do you think actually read this? Secondly, the fact that, you know, if this was simply about customs duties and tariffs, you know, it could be about this thick instead of being 3 or 4 inches thick. But under fast track, Congress has 60 days in which to consider the treaty that has been presented to them. And when it finally comes to the floor for a mandatory vote by the end of those 60 days, debate is limited, but most important, they cannot make any amendments to the treaty. It's an up or down vote, yes or no. And so even though they may not like certain parts of that agreement, they're under tremendous pressure, both from the president's office as well as the major corporations, to agree to the treaty in its entirety. So the first thing that we have to do and concentrate on is to educate people about fast track trade promotion authority and to defeat it before this agreement is concluded. The president has said that passing trade promotion authority is on his trade agenda for this year. It's expected that it will come before Congress sometime this fall. If we can put that off longer, that would be terrific. But when this law was last passed in 2002 for a period of 5 years, it expired in 2007, it was passed only by a two-vote margin. So it's possible to defeat fast track. It's going to be tough. And with the crazy Congress that we have, who knows how some of these people will vote. However, if the Tea Party types are true to their values, they ought to be with us on this.
In the Progressive Caucus, if they're true to their values.
Well, that's true. Good point. And I don't think anybody has anywhere near a vote count on this. But if we can defeat Fast Track, then it's going to be very difficult for the president to get the final treaty passed through Congress, because there will be too much bickering back and forth about this particular provision that hurts a part of the economy of this member of Congress's district, and so forth and so on. So that is our real chance. We have our campaign against the agreement itself, but the first major and most critical battle is actually against Fast Track. So with that, unless there are questions specifically about details of what we know about this agreement, I'd like to turn to Margaret and then to...
You're referring to what Elizabeth Warren has been sending out, right? She has a petition that's constantly going out, Fast Track. Is this what that...
It's the
same thing. This is, okay. So she's advocating for you.
Right, yeah, she's with us.
Does this time expire in this agreement, or is that once they sign up, it goes forever?
No, it's, well, in the past, it's always been for a limited period of time. And in 2002, it lasted for 5 years and expired in 2007. It has not been renewed since.
You're talking about Fast Track?
Fast Track, yes.
You're talking about Fast Track?
Yeah,
I'm talking about the agreement.
It will last forever.
That's what I'm... And there was a question over here.
Yeah, did you say something about the environmental effects of this?
And I'm going to go up.
You're going to talk about this. Public Citizen has been on this for...
the regular...
Maybe before we take more questions, let me go ahead and talk a little bit, and then we'll see if there's a lot of questions. I'm Margaret Flowers. I'm co-director of It's Our Economy.us and one of the organizers of Popular Resistance. And our websites are up here. PopularResistance.org and FlushTheTPP.org is a campaign of... PopularResistance.org. And so, does anybody have any doubts that this is what we would call a global corporate coup? From what you heard from David so far. So this is a really critical issue. And I imagine that some of you are probably advocates for one issue or another. So if anybody here advocates for anything, raise your hand. Okay. So we heard this is the kind of issue that unites every single one of us. Because I guarantee that there's something you care about that is going to be harmed by this agreement if it goes through. So someone mentioned the environment. How does this affect the environment? If a country passes a law that protects the environment, and a corporation finds that that law interferes with its ability to make future profit, it can sue that country for millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars, and the country has a choice of either getting rid of the law or paying that amount of money. Now you might say, that's crazy, that would never happen. Well, it's happening right now under NAFTA. There's a Canadian corporation called Lone Pine Resources, or Lone Pine Industries. They actually incorporated in Delaware so that they could be a foreign corporation and sue their own country for $250 million because they were exploring the possibility of fracking underneath around the St. Lawrence River. And Canada had the gall to ban fracking around the St. Lawrence River. Right? So you see where I'm going. Environmental laws will be undermined by this agreement. What else do people care about? Name an issue.
Public health.
Healthcare. So you heard about the patent protections. They're looking for 20 years, but they're not just looking for a 20-year patent and medical device protection. They're looking for what's called an evergreen process, which means that if during those 20 years they determine that whatever it is they've patented has a new indication or a new method of delivery, they reapply for another patent and it starts all over again. So it's evergreen, constantly green patent. So this drives up the price of medications. But even greater than that, we know from a chapter that was leaked in June of 2011 that they are trying to, how do I put this? If something is considered to be a state-owned enterprise, so say that means anything that has any sort of benefit from a public government, local, state, or federal.
Japan's healthcare system?
Like Japan's healthcare system, or like our own Medicare or Medicaid or the VA system in this country. Those are considered state-owned enterprises, and they have unfair market advantages because they get special treatment or they can negotiate for prices and things like that. So that would be unfair underneath the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and it gives the pharmaceutical corporations, the medical device corporations, greater legal standing to challenge the reimbursements that they would get from those systems. So right now, those systems set the prices, and pretty much the corporations have to take it or leave it. Now they can challenge it. And what do they consider to be a fair market price? It's not just the cost of producing whatever it is that they made or researching, despite the fact that 80% of our research is publicly financed. But that aside, in addition to R&D and production, they're asking for the marketing costs, which is the bulk of their costs, is marketing these things. And that's factored into what's considered a fair price. So they will undermine public health systems here in the United States and around the world. What else do people
food. Care? Drones.
Food. All right. So some of the things that they're getting rid of are buy local provisions, and also, and I don't understand this completely, maybe you understand more, but they would require that we would have to accept the importation of foods from other countries that may not be labeled. We may not know what these foods are or what are actually in them, but we have to allow them into our country. They get rid of things like farm to table. They interfere with our ability to buy directly from the farms.
GMO.
And the GMO. Monsanto was a huge backer of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Because if we ban, you know, GMO foods or cause, you know, require labeling, that interferes with their expected profits. And they can then sue
drones
to change that. Drones, militarization. I mean, maybe you can help.
I'll say, like, one of the ways they can affect, this is why I think one of the more scary things, actually. On militarization issues generally, one of the powers that the TPP does is give banks complete freedom to move in and out of countries with their capital. So there's no capital controls. So let's say in the Asia pivot, the United States wants a Navy base in Vietnam, and Vietnam's saying, well, you know, we don't really want a Navy, one of your Navy bases. You know, we hear your soldiers rape people, you know. And then, you know, J.P. Morgan says, we're going to pull our money out of your country unless you let the Navy base in. That's the kind of power that they give you, these corporations, this corporate government, that they can then pull their money out, pull out their investment, collapse their economy, or take the Navy base, or allow the drone base, allow the Asian pivot to be in your territory. And one of the interesting things about this is it's occurring at the time of the Asian pivot. So we have this trade agreement that China is not part of. The Asian, the transnational, the
Trans-Pacific
partnership, and China's not part of it? It's kind of strange. Now, China's put into a really lose-lose situation here, because they can either not be part of it, and then that means that all these Pacific Rim countries are developing their trade without Chinese goods as much, and Chinese is very important to the Chinese economy, or there's two chairs over here. Or they can get involved in the TPP, and their whole economy's got to be transformed, because state-owned enterprises. That's how China operates. Their energy, their healthcare, their transit, stay on. And so for them, it would be a major transfer. So China's really, if they are allowed in, is stuck in a no-win situation. So here we have an economic Asian pivot that weakens China economically, and at the same time, having the 60% of our Navy moved into the Asian Pacific, and we are targeting China with Air Force as well.
Oh my God.
So it's quite an interesting time period for this TPP to happen in Asia.
Yeah, just one thing very quickly. One of the interesting things that is very seldom talked about in these agreements is that they not only include all of the trade-related or the various regulations in the free trade agreement, but they actually contain provisions that change American law be in conformance with what they have negotiated in this treaty. And it's very likely that since opening up the financial services market in Asia is a major concern for Goldman Sachs and all the rest of the banks that crashed the economy, that there could be a serious weakening of Dodd-Frank, which wasn't that strong to begin with. But it could further undermine the controls over the major banks in the United States and in other countries are part of the agreement as well. So the fact that we are changing American laws through these agreements with so little opportunity for scrutiny from people that are supposed to be passing the laws makes another aspect of the...
In fact, Glass-Steagall, under Clinton, because the WTO required that also. So that was a trade agreement inspired change that we could see the same kind of thing with derivative regulation, for example.
Right. So just quickly, a couple of things. The countries that we're negotiating with right now, we already have agreements that cover 90% of their GDP. So this is not really about trade. In addition, we know that, and what I don't remember the time period, it's in the last few years, all the countries that we have trade agreements with, our trade deficit has grown by 440%. However, the countries that we don't have a trade agreement with, our trade deficit shrunk. So this is not about trade. This is a backroom door, and everything that the corporations have wanted, and they have not been able to get it through the front door. So then you guys are probably concerned about SOPA, internet freedom and privacy. That will be undermined by the TPP. That's included in the TPP. We talked about worker rights, finance, our sovereignty of our laws. All these things are going to be affected. And what's unique about this one, this agreement, is the docking agreement. I can't express that enough. No other trade agreement has allowed countries to dock onto it after it's been negotiated. But this one does. So it can become a template for the trade agreements around the world, which is why this is so important. And there are a couple of questions, and I want to move into how we're going to stop this.
Animal protection, anything on that?
Animal protection.
I haven't seen anything on that. I bet there is, though.
But if there are profits, that would be a problem.
They have no rights.
If it's going to undermine our workers' rights, wages, and worker safety laws, I can imagine that our animal laws are not going to be that great. Yeah. So let's take a stack. So we're going to do one in the yellow, two, three, four. You had your hand up. Five and six, and then we'll move, and seven. Okay. We'll
I just wanted to know what happened. They met just this week with Japan for the first meeting. What, do you have any news?
The only reports I saw on Japan were, in fact, I was on a Japanese financial channel, and there was a report before I went on, and the reporter was talking about how they were able to interview the negotiator for Japan afterwards, and he said absolutely nothing. He refused to answer any questions, so they're being very quiet. The sense is that Japan is going to slow the process down. They're a very hard trade negotiator. They're very protective of their economy, and so that. But one thing that's happened in China with Japan already is they've already invited. They have one of the best healthcare systems in the world.
One of the top three.
France, Japan, and Australia in the top three, and they're very worried about their healthcare system becoming like ours. That's what I was going to say. One of the things that's happened as part of the negotiation process, perhaps, they've invited one of the U.S. insurance companies in to run their insurance, their healthcare program. So already it's going toward privatization.
How do you explain what is Barack Obama's motivation for doing this on his own?
Well, I mean, this is very consistent with what the policy has been from the beginning, is to bring in these corporations and to pretty much act on their behalf. But as Kevin often says, this is a retirement plan.
Well, that's probably a little cynical of me. But in my cynical moments, I would say that he's going to make trillions for transnational corporations. He will have the biggest Obama Library, Obama Center, any president for this return and get some great $100,000 plus speaking fees. But on the other side, he's a Wall Street Democrat. He surrounds himself with Wall Street. He surrounds himself with the insurance companies. He has Monsanto as his food czar. I mean, you know, he has General Electric as his job czar. I mean, this is just consistent with his whole corporate administration. It's about as corporate as it can get.
Okay, number three.
Yeah, your comments about China. One of my biggest fears about CPP is China.
Yeah.
And what China has been doing over the last 2 years, they've brought up over 400 seaports. They're in the process of just negotiating with Nicaragua to put a massive canal through Nicaragua. They're going to do, I forget, like 12 train lines that run back and forth across the Nicaragua. And it puts them in a tremendous position of power. Controlling access to
Those purchases you
mean. Yes. Yeah. So when we try to pull strings on them, they can pull strings back on them. It could be the start of a trade cold war like we've never seen.
And there have been China, if you read the China news, you know, the daily newspaper from China, you'll see generals regularly talking about war with the United States is inevitable. They're prepared. They're expecting that. So that's what they're talking about. Some of them are talking. What's going to happen? We can't predict the future. But why are we doing this massive Asian pivot? 60% of our Navy. Why are we surrounding China with Air Force attack planes?
Exactly.
You know, why we have more nuclear weapons than ever pointed at them? We're doing these things. These are happening. So something's going on there.
They own like 6 ports in Mexico now.
I mean, it could just be one to edge them into an arms race. And like with the Soviet Union, try to screw up their economy. You know, it could be something like that. It could be intimidation. Who knows what the purpose is? But what we're doing is setting it up, so those are all possibilities.
Who's number 4?
Me. I just was wondering how TPP affects their internal each individual states. Like if a state decides, like Vermont, doesn't want to go with Monsanto and Monsanto labeling.
They could be sued.
So TPP also applies internally?
It applies to local, state, and federal laws will have to become
and not just laws, but regulations or court decisions can also all result in a trade tribunal lawsuit. And one of the things about the TPP is these judges will be on these 3 judge panels will be corporate lawyers on temporary leave from their corporation, ruling, and then going back to their corporation. So it's a rigged trade tribunal that makes them more powerful.
So who's going to have to sign from each state on this?
No, they're not going to have to sign.
They're just part of it.
There is a possible, there's some possibility for states to opt out of some provisions. And we tried to get Governor Doyle here in Wisconsin to opt out of Panama, Korea, and Colombia. And just wasn't interested. But another aspect of this is that in terms of government procurement on all levels, foreign corporations have to be given the same rights as domestic corporations, so that this would outlaw Buy American laws for government purchases, Buy Wisconsin, Buy Local, you know, any kind
buy
of these sorts of provisions. Exactly. Any of these restrictions would be illegal under the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And this wasn't talked about much, but some of those provisions through the World Trade Organization actually kicked in during the stimulus program in terms of what the government could buy in terms of materials that they were restricted from limiting it to the American corporation. So our tax dollars, you know, go abroad instead of helping to build our economy, trying to get out of this depression.
Or reduce our carbon footprint.
Number 5.
Just some housekeeping things because I'm just coming up to speed on this one. Real quick, what exactly happens if Congress refuses to give this a hearing? Like, you know, I see some advantages there. What exactly is this going to do to Obamacare? And is there any states' rights? Most favored nation clauses have been written into almost everything we do in this country, initially to protect corporations, right? So I imagine, I mean, my experience working with utilities, most favored nation clauses are almost impossible to defeat. Is there a strategy to turn it around and use that in this case?
Well, I have no idea.
As I'm aware of, but yes, it will undermine our health care system in terms of...
Well, Obamacare not as much because that's already a very privatized system.
Right.
That's already the health insurance industry.
Yeah.
And it's going to make it harder to keep health care prices down because you won't be able to control... pharmaceutical prices as well.
It's
going
to start at 325 and go right back up to 800.
It'll make all that worse. So Obamacare, I mean, all healthcare systems will be given, I mean, less power. Governments will get less power over healthcare. And insurance companies, pharmaceuticals, for-profit hospitals will be given more access to all these markets, including the United States.
So we're going to get into more of this. So we had 2 more questions before we
move
on.
Yeah, there's a great video out put out by Friends of the Earth. It's an environmental group, and it talks about how Texaco, which is now Chevron, went into Ecuador and trashed the place. It's a biodiverse place on the face of the earth, and just left oil all over. Ecuador sued Chevron, or then Texaco, now Chevron, and won, I forget how much, $18 billion.
$16 or $18 billion.
And the three-judge panel denied the case, denied the lawsuit.
They sued the trade tribunal to try to overcome it.
Yeah, they sued the trade tribunal and the tribunal.
What's the name of that video?
It's called Peril in the Pacific. It's a great video. You see just how badly they trashed that.
It's done by Friends of the Earth.
Friends of the Earth, yeah.
Greg, you're next.
Great job in putting this forum on. Quick comment and question. Comment. You know, this goes back 200 years. Corporations were controlled at one time through the charter process.
Exactly.
But they escaped democratic control. Well, it's relative. But democratic control in three ways. One is corporations tried to move decision making from the legislative arena to the judicial arena, the courts, where judges can be bought. Second, they moved from the legislative arena, that's relatively speaking more democratic, to the regulatory arena, where corporations can get their own guys and gals on regulatory panels. And third is they moved decision making from one level of government to another level, lower to higher, where it's harder to impact. So, moving from state to federal, what is this? Simply moving from federal to international, corporate governance. It's what it's about, not trade, whether it's free
exactly.
or trade.
Right.
Question. Mentioned before about fast track. How can Congress, on their own, give up their constitutional authority? Has anyone, either presently or in the past, actually challenged this in the courts to say that you are not permitted to give up your own constitutional authority?
I believe that there was a challenge during the national negotiations, and I'm very hazy on this, but I believe the decision was that since Congress does have to ultimately vote on the treaty that is given to them,
But even though they give up their power.
You have to understand, administrative law allows Congress to do that. Congress gives up their responsibility on regulating securities, on drugs, on, pick the issue. Administrative law doesn't give the power to another agency. And so Congress, under the Commerce Clause, has the responsibility to regulate trade among nations. They can then transfer the power to the executive, and then they keep the responsibility to approve what the executive does. I think a court would unfortunately uphold that.
And then the last question before we move on to the campaign.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about something I heard and read about, I can't remember exactly where, that the provision might be, won't be able to read, like the public won't be able to look at it in 4 years.
That's correct.
And I also just wanted to add, and just if you could share something about that, but also I just want to say, I want to thank you. Because on July 10th, not only have you done so much to help bring this issue to public awareness, the articles you've been writing, particularly, I've heard several, but the July 10th article, Global Revolt Against Corporate Domination, from, it was on Truth Out.
We read that?
Yeah. No, and I say that because point something out about this topic that was awesome, that where they're overreaching, that it's an opportunity.
Well, that's the next topic, yes.
For everybody to come together.
Exactly.
And that really is inspiring,
yes.
And I really just love that message.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate that.
So there was a lot of public outcry.
It's a great lead into our next
study. Yes, it is, but I wanted to answer the first part of that, which is, this has been going on for over 3 years, these negotiations, mostly in secret. We're all in secret. There was a lot of public outcry as people started to learn this was going on for transparency, to release the text, as every other past trade agreement, our U.S. trade representative would post the text even before it was passed on their website so the public could look at it. So the response from the negotiators was, not only are we not going to show it to you, but nobody can look at it until 4 years after it's either signed or 4 years after we decide we're no longer negotiating.
I don't know how that's possible, as they said. I can't imagine that being true.
So anyway, so this is, we're in a situation here.
How is that possible?
I don't know if it's possible.
The minutes of the Constitutional Convention were kept secret for 53 years.
Wow.
Right. So this is, we're in, if you think about it, every issue that we care about, We face a common obstacle, which is the corporate power, the corporate control of our political process. And if we unite together, we actually have the strength to have an effect. And this is an issue that unites every single one of us. And if we win it, it's a huge win against transnational corporate power. It's a win that we can build off of and go to the next level. So this is why this is so crucial. And though we're not sure if they're going to try to push it through by October because of Japan just joining onto the agreement, it may go to the spring. It's really in our interest to push as if October is the time, because we don't want to find out that they go ahead and pass fast track the end of September and make this decision and do the votes in October as they had initially planned. So Ron Kirk, who was the former U.S. Trade Representative, said that after he stepped down, that if the American people knew what was in this, they would not be able to get it signed. And that's how previous trade agreements have been stopped. When the public knew what was in it and had a loud enough outcry, then they didn't have the guts to go against what the public wanted. So we have to create the environment that this is politically unsavory. That's our job. It's education is a key thing. And so there's a couple tools that we've given, that we've created to help with education. One is this TPP OccuCard. On the front, it has a nice glossy graphic, and on the back, information about what the TPP is and some websites that people can go to. So I recommend that you get some of these. OccuCards, you can order them for a very low cost, or you can download the PDF yourself and print it yourself or have your local printer, whatever is easiest.
We'll have a lot of them at the event tomorrow. Tomorrow is Saturday. We'll have a lot of the event on Saturday to hand out to the crowd here. So if you're out there on Saturday and want something to do, take a bunch of OccuCards, and it'll be the farmer's market. There'll be lots of people there educating people.
Yes.
Now, there are some groups that have been working on this for a long time. So as someone mentioned, Public Citizen, Global Trade Watch. They've been working on this a long time. Lori Wallach and Ben Beachy, who does the Eyes on Trade blog, have been doing excellent writing. So if you want to really kind of get like the wonky policy perspective part of this, it's good to go to the Public Citizen website. Citizens Trade Campaign is another group that's been working on trade issues for a long time. They were fighting NAFTA, and they have a lot of good information on their website. What we've created hand-in-hand with a number of the organizations across the country and also in Mexico and in Canada is a campaign called Flush the TPP. Now, there are a lot of groups that are kind of focused on the lobbying piece. Some of the unions, Public Citizen, they've been focused on meeting with members of Congress and trying to get them to commit not to give up their constitutional power for fast track. It's going to take more than that, because we're facing something that the Republicans want, because it's free trade, market-based ideology. It's something that the Democrats are going to either support or feel like they have to support, because it's their president's agreement. In fact, and the fact that their campaign funders are the same ones that are negotiating this agreement. There's a lot of pressure on them to accept this agreement. So it's up to us to create that counter pressure. So first is education, letting people know that this is an issue that unites us. And then we need to, this month and through September 8th, your members of Congress are at home in their home districts. So this is a time for you to start going to their events, bird dogging them, asking them if they support the TPP or do they support the Constitution, asking them if they're going to oppose the fast track. We have on our website, flushthetpp.org, which is our campaign. You can take the pledge, and if you do that, it signs you up to our email list so that you can get every week an email blast about what's going on. But this is a website that is specifically designed for action. So underneath the toolkit, as you'll see at the top bar where it says tools, a little suitcase. Mm-hmm. Under there we have a list of the corporations that are involved in negotiating this. Mm-hmm. We have ideas for creative actions. One is you could outsource your Congress member's office. Walk in with some boxes and tell them that you're moving them out. fun things that you can do. There's also a letter there. If you want to download the letter, you can alter it as you see fit, for your own situation, and present that to your member of Congress. And really what we're asking them is to make a commitment. By mid-September, we want to know, are you going to vote for fast track? Are you not going to vote for fast track? One of the things that we have planned down the line is that September 17th is the second anniversary of Occupy Wall Street. And they've decided that fighting the TPP is a high priority for them for this anniversary. So they're doing some creative street theater, and they're going to share that with us. They have a whole theme around Star Wars, but it's called Money Wars. And the Death Star is a big roll of toilet paper called the TPP.
That's also Constitution Day.
Oh, great. Wow. I didn't know that. Thank you, Greg. So that's an opportunity. Your member of Congress has not committed to a post-fast track to organize an action in solidarity, exposing who their campaign funders are and who it is whose interests they're really acting on behalf of. What else?
We're last doing, round of negotiations.
We're doing Pound TPP Tuesdays. So every Tuesday we encourage people to take some sort of an action. People have been doing visibility actions, holding up signs in their community, doing highway bannering, light brigades. If you have a light brigade in your community, and if you don't know if you have one, light brigades are they're groups of people who do messaging where they take a black piece of paper, each person holds one, and it has punched out a different letter, and then they put an LED light behind it, and they do signs. If you go to our website, popularresistance.org, you'll see pictures of people holding up signs for light brigades, and it's a great way to get the message out. And there are light brigade chapters all around the country, and they've committed to assisting this campaign. If you're interested in setting up a light brigade,
started here in Wisconsin.
Oh, did it? Great.
Oh, okay.
Excellent. Oh, great. Great.
Are you going to have any conference calls or pre-recorded?
There are constant conference calls.
Oh, well, you know, every Thursday.
If you nothing else, you would be.
Every Thursday we do a conference call at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, and if you're interested in doing that, just contact me. It's flushthetpp@popularresistance.org.
On
Thursdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, we do a conference call about the campaign. There's a group of anti-GMO groups. It's labeled GMO-free and labeled GMOs, Moms Against GMOs, are organizing Twitter storms. The first one's going to be this Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time until 10:30. If you tweet, you want to get on there, and we do Pound TPP Tuesday, and the tweeting will be about how this affects food. And we have Alexa Wagemeyer. She's with Organic Consumers Association. We'll be tweeting and answering questions.
That'll be the first of a series of Twitter parties, creating a Twitter storm. And the idea of those is to do outreach. There are a lot of groups out there that are affected by all these issues, and we want this one to be on food, the first one, so we're going to be focusing on food-related groups, and we're going to be going to groups with large lists and hitting their hashtag. We'll have hopefully scores of people joining in this Twitter party to create a flood of tweets so these groups become aware, hey, why are they tweeting about what the hell is TPP? Because Tweet TPP has been, it's amazing how well kept a secret it's been. It's the largest trading group in history, NAFTA on steroids, really a global corporate coup, and people don't know that. Now, I guarantee you, a year ago we had this meeting, we probably had five people in the room. I know when we used to talk about this a year ago, we'd ask, have you heard of TPP? We'd be lucky 10% put their hands up.
And this is activist groups.
Now we're hitting majorities of activists. I'd say, in this conference, probably 80% knew about the TPP, so we made a lot of progress. And more activists were getting involved. Margaret mentioned the food folks, the anti-GMO, the whole March Against Monsanto people, those are. The light brigade, we're getting MoveOn, regional groups are getting involved. MoveOn's been more broken down at local levels, and they have more autonomy and aggressiveness.
Yeah.
And so they're starting to join in, and so we're getting those groups. So in the last, I'd say, month, we've seen a real increase in people getting involved. And so we're really trying to build to a very nice crescendo in the early fall.
In addition, on the toolkit, in addition to the letter that you can alter and give to your Congress member, there's an immigrant rights letter. There's been a lot of outreach to immigrant rights groups because this letter ties together border militarization and free trade. So that's another tool that you can use to reach out in your community to people. What we expect to be the last round of negotiations is going to be August 22nd, August 30th. So that's an ideal time to organize actions in the community as well. And again, it can be very simple.
August 22nd.
To August 30th.
We'd like to take a week of actions there. We want to, and if you have actions happen, report them.
you know, to flush a TPP, so we can tweet them out, we can Facebook them out, social network them out, so people can see actions are going on, and someone else doing action. So that one kind of magnified, you know, the number of events happening that way by, you know, using the social media to get it out there and showing people growing. Some of those days are weekend days, so you got some big events on a weekend day when people aren't working, kind of march against Monsanto type activity. So look at that last week of August as a chance to really organize your community. Use it as an opportunity to create the kind of solidarity we can do with this, because this affects, as we said, every issue: labor, environment, banking, healthcare. You know, you pick the issue.
Immigration.
Every issue is affected by this, really. Every major issue, and militarization. You know, so you can really, it's an opportunity to reach out to all the groups in your community and say, hey, this is what we got to come together on. This is an opportunity for solidarity. You know, the keys to our success are making a mass movement, not just this issue, but on all issues. Mass movements can't be ignored. And the first step to creating a mass movement is solidarity among those who are already active. If we get the choir from these various issues singing together on this event, and we win, it's a very powerful moment for the movement. And we can then trumpet that success and build on it, as Margaret said.
Let me just point out a few more tools before we take questions. Underneath the news section of the website, you're going to find a number of videos. Comedian Lee Camp did an excellent comedic video explaining the TPP, if you're not offended by language, you may enjoy it. A group called The Naked Emperor has a character called Ollie Gark. Some of you may know Ollie Gark. They did a series of videos of the TPP from the perspective of some of the corporations that are involved. So he represents Monsanto, talking about why Monsanto loves the TPP. He represents Walmart, GE Capital, I think one of the oil companies. I can't remember which one it is.
Are all these on that site?
Yes,
all
are.
Of these are on Flush the TPP, news underneath news. We have a YouTube channel, a Flush the TPP YouTube channel, and there are videos there, as well as Kevin and I and some others did a presentation at a public banking conference in California, and those videos have been broken up into each one of us speaking, and we each spoke about a different aspect, so you can see those as well on our YouTube channel. Let's see, what else do I want to say? Oh, if you have an action, if you decide that you're going to do an action, and it can be very simple. Grab a couple of your best friends, make some signs, and go stand at busy traffic time at a traffic place, or take some of the OccuCards. We went to the train station in Baltimore City at rush hour when people were coming off of work and stood out there with signs and handed out OccuCards and handed about 400 cards.
That doesn't sound like much. What is 100 degrees out there?
And some people took the card just because they said, if you're standing out here, this meeting has got to be important. So hand out the cards in your community. I think those were the main
just make some
tools
point.
That I wanted
before we
to
take do. Questions, only one or two quick points. This is a winnable battle. We can stop this. You know, since the 1999 Seattle protest against WTO, WTO has been stopped. It's not really made any progress. Since that time, 14 trade agreements have been left unfinished because they're so unpopular. The trade agreements that have passed, as was mentioned, you know, when Fast Track was passed, it was two votes. The trade agreements, the few that have passed, have been very close votes. And, you know, if this delays into next year, an election year, you know, all things, a lot of these change then. The Republicans don't want to deny Obama any victories. They want the Democrats, so it becomes a partisan opportunity. And if we start to raise with the conservatives the issue of national sovereignty, that's an issue people care about on the right. And so I don't not reach out to the right wing on this. In fact, I'd recommend you do. It'd be so great to get the Tea Party base aware of this and how this undermines our sovereignty. Uh-huh. They don't like Wall Street either, by the way. You know, Tea Party began with a lot of prison in Wall Street. They're not that different than we are in a lot of issues. And so I think it's important to reach out and make this kind of broad, because we're not going to win this with just Democrats voting with us. This is Obama's.
Yeah.
So if you think you're going to win this with Democrats, you're wrong. We're going to win this with a right-left combination. And so it's very important to do outreach. To do outreach to the right as well. But the point of this is, the protests in the United States, while they're starting to get going, are small compared to what's happening in Japan, for example, or Australia. There's a lot of protests about this around the world. This is not just us in the United States opposing this. It's people around the world. And so it's an opportunity for a global solidarity as well as a cross-issue solidarity. And it becomes the people versus the transnational corporations. What a framing. That's the framing we want. And so this is an opportunity, and as I said, 14 have been stopped, or at least not completed. The WTO has been stopped. These are not popular. One advantage we have over NAFTA is we now have the NAFTA experience. People know NAFTA didn't help our economy. It hollowed out our economy. People know it didn't help the Mexican farmers. In fact, it maybe I would say NAFTA was the primary cause of the increase in illegal immigration. It destroyed family farms in Mexico. It forced people into the cities, lowered wages in the cities, and people couldn't survive there. So they came to the United States to survive. People don't want to leave their country to come here. They leave because of necessity. And NAFTA was that necessity. And so we have the experience of NAFTA, we have the experience of other trade agreements, that we can, people, you don't have to even explain it. You just say NAFTA, this is NAFTA bigger, this is NAFTA made worse. So it's a very easy communication with people across the political spectrum, because we've lived through this. We've seen how it screwed our economy up and screwed out. All it helps is the transnational corporations and the oligarchs, as oligarch says. And so I hope people see this as a great opportunity to build your movement locally, nationally, and globally. It's a gift to us if we take it. We have to have recognize we have the power to stop this. Because we do have the power to stop this. And it'll be a tremendous victory for all of us. So.
Let's take questions. And I'm going to start with people who haven't asked a question yet. So I'm going to do stack again. So I'm going to measure 1, Joan is 2, 3, 4 in the blue shirt with the water bottle, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
Remember your number.
1.
I live in Madison, and I'm wondering, and I work with Physicians for Social Responsibility. And I'm just wondering whether people in Madison or in Wisconsin are trying to get groups together to do something in an organized way, because we would, I'm sure, become involved, but then, you know, there's other environmental groups, there's just all sorts of organizations I can think of, and if we tried to put on an event that a lot of us were backing and sending people to, it would be an impressive sight, I would think. So I just wonder if you know.
We are just starting that, unfortunately. And part of the issue is resources, but we're starting.
So what that means is you have the job of reaching out to all the groups that you know of.
Well, but if other people are trying to start.
Well, that's what we're doing the event tomorrow.
Yeah, join in.
And we should all be talking to each other.
Exactly. And I did write a healthcare-oriented article, didn't I?
Al Jazeera.
Al Jazeera is an op-ed on the TPP and healthcare, so it's Google, Flowers, TPP, Portland, Oklahoma.
We have roses and lilies, all kinds of flowers you bring in. Yeah. It's an amazing thing, all the flowers that she brings in.
And do come out. Do come out tomorrow. We're going to meet downstairs right after the 12:30 workshop. We're going to march at 12:40 over to State Street, to the Capitol steps. The farmer's market is just going to be finishing up. If you're interested in going to the farmer's market earlier, we brought 2,000 Occupy TPP occupiers to pass out at the farmer's market. We have a huge 30-foot-long banner that we're going to have over there, and we're going to do some good chants. And so definitely come out tomorrow and raise that awareness.
Number two.
Is there legislation proposed in Congress that would prevent this from, that would protect us from having this happen again rather than our having to fight this battle again and again? Nobody has proposed anything?
There's a lot of work going on behind the scenes by some of our favorite senators, like Max Baucus.
Our personal
favorite. Our personal rest of both of us. He's promising to get faster. And so that's the guy that's pushing it.
But
there are some people trying to stop it, too.
No, but Baucus wants faster. I mean, some legislation that says no global things that we can...
Senator Warren is, you know, she has a petition. Actually, we have a petition as well to President Obama on causes.com.
That's why I'm here. Alan Grayson has been good. Alan Grayson's probably the only one to see the, actually most of the TPP. He was not given a full copy. He got summaries of some sections. So even though it took him 8 months to try to see it, he didn't get to see all of it, but he did get close to seeing what actually is in there.
There is a letter, a sign-on letter. Is it Rose DeLauro from New York?
Yes,
the House of Representatives. Has a, is it Connecticut?
Yeah.
She has a letter saying that Congress shouldn't give up their right to negotiate the TPP. Because if they don't get fast-track, let's reiterate it. Yeah.
I just want to clarify something. I think it's great that we hit all of our congresspeople, but this is, like everything else, is constitutionally the Senate approved.
No, both houses would be approving.
Oh, really?
Will they both be approving fast track?
Because every treaty is approved only by the Senate.
That's right. Treaties are. This is a trade agreement.
It's not a treaty.
This is also a project of the Alliance for Democracy.
Yes, very well.
So we'll be working on that.
Great.
And this brings to mind Bush Sr. talking about the New World Order.
Very much.
Very much when they were trying to pass NAFTA. And currently I'm from Portland, Oregon, and we have, like so many other places, Walmart is really saturating us. And there is the fantasy that they dropped their ALEC membership. They didn't. They only suspended it. So when I go to city council, I'm talking about ALEC. I'm talking about the TPP because Walmart has free representatives and people don't know. So our mouths need to be open.
And that New World Order language is a great language to talk about with right-wing people. There's a lot of anti-New World Order. And so this really is a whole trade tribunal system rigged for the corporations that can sue countries. That is a New World Order. That's what this is.
Very quickly. Don't talk about the TPP, at least until we've really got everybody educated about it, because so few people know what TPP stands for. So use the Trans-Pacific Partnership, it's a mouthful, but do it, because otherwise it's going to go over people's heads. Second thing is that the head of the WTO back in the mid-90s, when asked what the World Trade Organization was doing, his response was, we are writing the Constitution for the global economy.
That's really what is happening.
And that is what is happening, not at this point for the WTO, but to other directions.
I think one reason they're pushing the TPP is because the WTO is stalled. Yeah.
And this is a way of getting around it.
So they get this
the docking mechanism.
Exactly, the docking mechanism allows this to become the further stages of the WTO.
Number five, I think, was in the back somewhere.
So what, of all those resources that you have up there, what do you think would be the best few to use with right-wingers?
With right-wingers, I think that's what another thing I wanted to mention was we also have these slides underneath the header on the website. You will see the series of slides. You can click on each of those. Each one of those educates about a different aspect of the TPP, and those are available on our Facebook page, which is also linked to the website. If you scroll down on the website, you'll see the link to our Facebook page. Those are all images on our Facebook page that you can steal, do whatever you want with them, spread them around.
There's one on sovereignty that would be perfect for the right-wingers.
Yeah.
Let me just mention that Wisconsin Fair Trade Coalition twice has contacted every single Tea Party group in the state that we could identify. And to my surprise, but also incredible disappointment, I was only able to talk to one person from one Tea Party group, and then after our conversation, in which I was appealing to these very, these sovereignty issues that we do share, and was not able then to get a call back after that. And I think a lot of it is you know, they are suspicious about working with unions, they're suspicious about working with any kind of progressive organizations. If any of you... Well, you know, there are a number, right, but there are a number of independent groups in Wisconsin that aren't even associated with national groups. And there is a, well, if anybody figures out how to crack through this wall and make a link with the Tea Party groups, please let any of us know.
But I think it's more, you know, talking to the people in your community, regardless of their ideology. This is something that we can all do, talking to your neighbors.
Six?
My apologies for coming in a little bit late, but I'm from Dallas, Texas, and last year, May or June, there was one of the negotiations was in Dallas,
right.
And one of the groups I'm active with was Occupy Dallas, and we were approached by Public Citizen, I believe the national office, though we do have an office in Texas, with Tom Smith. Is Public Citizen involved in business?
Yes, well, yeah. You see that right there?
Okay, I'm sorry.
Excellent action there, giving Ron Kirk.
Yeah, we had over 500 people protesting. Now, our local media tried to black us out, though some folks went behind one of the TV stations where they were having a reporter and it was a clear window behind them, and they held up a banner, and then later on they cleared it out. But we were able to get over 500 people there from across the state, and we were able to get people inside. And then we're talking with some of the delegates, and some of them didn't know how bad it was, and then others who knew how bad it was, they were happy to see so many Americans out there saying, why are you doing this? So it is a great opportunity. But when are you supposed to make a decision about this? I'm sorry, I came in late.
Well, the original game plan was October. With Japan coming in late, that may delay things. There's a lot of areas that there's a lot they can't reach agreement on, so that may delay things. It could go from October to next spring. We don't really know. We're planning on October. And if we are, if it delays, we've done a lot of buildup, and we can keep building to the spring. So delay is actually a good thing in my view.
Okay.
And, you know, in Dallas, one of the great things that happened in Dallas was the Yes Men.
Yes,
they got into the Dallas negotiations. What's interesting about going to Dallas negotiations was they're walking in, they're filming it, and you see all these corporate logos in the hallway outside their meeting. It was like, whoa, this is like a corporate headquarters. And then they had an award. Yes, and they got to the front of the room, up to the lectern, and they were calling Ron Kirk up, who was the U.S. Trade Representative.
And former mayor of Dallas,
so it's his hometown. They call him up to get the award, and as he starts to walk up,
it's
they start.
Corporate power tool. I'm sorry.
She had to take the punchline.
Look at all that.
I would deliver it better.
Yes, you would have.
Anyway, so he gets up to the front of the room. He starts walking around the room and he starts to read the award. This award is given to Ron Kirk, the Corporate Power Tool of the Year award. Security grabs Kirk and says, you don't want to go get that award. So that was one of the Yes Men are just amazing, aren't they? Yeah. They just get in places.
The next negotiations was at a remote resort in Leesburg, Virginia. So we organized...
About 2 hours outside of D.C. And
so
we organized...
a big weather balloons that looked like a bottom with a pair of pants hanging down and a 70-foot banner that said, free trade my ass.
Margaret got on a tripod, you know, the big 20-foot tripod, and blocked the entrance to the resort. And you were up there for about an hour and a half or something. And the cops didn't know what to do. They started to try to move it and almost fell. They freaked out. Then we had some other people blocking another driveway with a big banner. They forced those guys down, arrested one of them, or took one of them in the back of the police car. And then they said, well, what do you do with this tripod? They don't know what to do. They started negotiating, Margaret coming down. We started to go, okay, we'll come down. And then Margaret, I'm not coming down unless they release the guy they put in the back of the car. Release our buddy Dick, and then I'll come down. So we got Dick released, and we got a lot of stuff back. We got to keep the tripod. and, you know, all of them.
Well, they came out, and their initial thing they said was, we're going to tase you, we're going to pepper spray you until you come down. And one of the people stabilizing one of the poles is an ex-military guy who pulls a pair of goggles out of his backpack and throws them on. I put them on, and I hooked in my safety, and I let go of the poles, and I said, okay.
That would have made national news.
It would have been awesome. It would have been worth it. You know? Dr. Clark gets chased by the police.
Just as a very quick follow-up, since you came in late and other people did too, even though we're talking about the agreement itself, fast track is the thing we have to concentrate on first, because that's where we can actually win this fight by defeating fast track in Congress.
And I just want to, and that's the thing I want to make one point about fast track, which was that Obama needs fast track to convince the other negotiators to sign the agreement. They're going against their own populations too. And they're going to be signing something that's not popular with their people. And they don't want to take that risk if they think the United States is not going to pass this. And so if fast track doesn't pass, they probably can't get some of those countries to sign on to it. So fast track works on a lot of different levels to make a gigantic difference. I think you're next. You know,
seven?
Oh,
I'm sorry, me?
What was number, six or seven?
Six or seven, I think.
I was six, you're seven.
Okay, six behind you, then you're next.
Go ahead.
You're seven.
Just one.
Okay, you go. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. Okay. Thank you.
All right, so since people were talking about, you know, reaching across aisle, so to speak, one thought came to mind. You know, I disagree with him on many issues, but there's one Republican who does talk about corporatism and crony capitalism, and that's Ron Paul.
Yeah, really?
So have you reached out to Ron Paul about this? Have you made any statements about it?
I don't think Ron's talking about it.
Not that I'm aware.
Ron Paul. Yeah, I've never heard either Rand or Ron saying about it yet. That's a great idea, though.
Yeah.
It's a great idea.
Yeah. See what Ron Paul has to say about it.
Mm-hmm. That's a great idea. Anyone from Kentucky in Texas, you can chat with Paul. Good idea.
The rate.
I was in between there somewhere.
Okay, yeah.
And then you're actually, you started to refer to the question I was going to ask about the other countries involved in this agreement. And the positions they're having on this at this point, if they also have oppositions. And do all the countries involved in this have to pass it for it to pass totally? Or did you think that if the United States passes it first, that they will put enough pressure on all of them to sign on to it?
Well, they're all going to sign on to it, and there is a lot of opposition. The current Japanese leader campaigned against the TPP for office, because it's not very popular in Japan. Now he's supporting it. The health system, the agricultural co-ops in Japan, they're all opposing it. So there's a lot of protests in Japan. So he's taking an unpopular position because he didn't run on it. He knows it's not popular. And I think that's true in a number of countries that we see that opportunity. So, and the more that we protest here, the stronger they get in those other countries. If they see the United States acting up and saying no, then they will give them more strength to stand up. Because some of those countries, pretty tough to stand up in. Some of these protests in these countries are like, hit, hold signs up, get in the car and leave. You know, because they're facing some prison time just for expressing their views. So some of these countries, folks are pretty brave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Germany gets
No, well, Germany's there's also an Atlantic version of this. That's next on the agenda, and that's way much behind this in the process. So we've had 18 rounds of negotiations here. They haven't had their first one yet.
They just had
their first one. Sorry. Yeah. And so they're just way behind. If we can stop the TPP and stop fast track, that makes that one hard to pass too. And that's going to be tougher to negotiate because the Europeans don't want Monsanto's GMOs coming in.
No, they don't. Yeah.
And they don't want their healthcare systems. They don't want their healthcare systems screwed up. I mean, there's a lot of good reasons for Europe to oppose this. So. What's that?
TTIP. Atlantic Trade and Investment
Partnership.
TAFTA.
Steve? I don't know if you know, if I explained, when I first met you, it was because in the fall of 2011, I received a letter from my CEO asking us all to support the free trade agreements in Colombia and Panama and South America. And I was just letting the thing go until I read his cover letter. And a few months earlier, he'd done the same thing. CEO sends the whole corporation a letter, has a link, automate letters to your congressman and your senator, and he bragged about the number who responded, and I think it was everybody except me. And he bragged about how he's spreading it through other corporations. So this goes out looking like mass public support of free trade agreements. I think we need to expose that if I haven't got myself in too much trouble. Maybe make an example of that and say, you guys know what you actually supported? I saw this priest murdered in Columbia a few weeks before that. There's kind of putting half the frame on the music video saying this was that video.
Yeah.
I think we need to counter this other that looks like popular support.
Since GACTA passed, the number of deaths has gone up in Columbia of organizers.
I had that book telling me that a few months ago. Yeah.
Yes.
And the U.S. Chamber of Commerce has passing the Trans-Pacific Partnership as their top objective.
Oh my God.
It's brilliant for these guys. They're going to love it.
Oh, and that's another thing is that if you haven't heard of the Green Shadow Cabinet, greenshadowcabinet.us is an alternative government project. And many members, there's about almost 100 members of the Green Shadow Cabinet. Kevin's the Attorney General, Secretary of Health. Is anybody else in here? Oh, George.
He's our peace guy.
That's right.
What's your title exactly?
Ambassador.
Ambassador.
A number of us wrote statements linking the TPP to our issue, so you can go there and find, you know, a wide variety of statements.
We try to break it up so labor about labor, environment, climate about climate. Mm-hmm. Everybody wrote that from their perspective.
Number 9.
My question was answered.
Okay.
I like that.
All right.
Number 10?
Yeah, we do only have about, we have less than 10 minutes. So.
Okay, number 10.
My understanding is that if it conflicts with our own constitution, it overrules it. Is that correct or incorrect?
Yep. Yeah. Not that it conflicts with statutes. That's a different story. But constitution, that's another story.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's going to fly in the face of a number of constitutional issues, I would think.
Pick one.
Search and seizure, perhaps?
Which one?
Search and seizure, in terms of...
You want to say something? Commerce clause. Well, except that Congress is giving up its authority. Congress is passing authority. I think that, to me, if I was in the Supreme Court, I would say that Congress can't give authority like that, because it's there for a reason. You can't delegate that. But administrative law allows such delegation by Congress that I suspect it would be upheld. And even though Congress says Congress has a responsibility to regulate foreign trade, pretty clear, they would be giving it up, and they'd have final vote on it. So I suspect the courts would hold it.
But I mean, the fact that we've already had fast track in this country from Nixon all the way up to what 2000 something, isn't that set a legal precedent that it's?
I assume. I bet there are some courts.
Has it ever been challenged in court?
I think it has.
I'm not a lawyer.
What's the question?
You know this concept of legal precedent because of some statute that was passed in 1972 or 73 that's been abused.
I think there have been court decisions also. So
that's what I want to know.
Have
there been
court
decisions?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm
sure
have.
Yeah. So number 11?
I'm sure the Thomas Court would be happy to overturn.
You're double as a thing.
Go ahead.
But I never like to deal with the Congress because I think they're a bunch of passive-aggressive people. I'm aggressive people, so I want to deal with the corporation. So I went through this list, and Walmart right now, their employees are really have grievance, and some of them working for people like me, we are mobilizing Walmart workers all the time to be in the street.
Yes.
So this is one way of, you know, creating a rally for them to protect their jobs, but also teaching them that TPP is going to take their job away. I can
see keep the wages low.
Wages
sure.
low.
And that's what we have in Walmart video. Yeah.
And then we have to do with Starbucks.
I think the Walmart video is one of the better ones, by the way. Yeah. I think it's pretty funny.
We have Starbucks that is in every corner. We can, you know, kind of do protesting. We have IBM in Boulder that we can do that, and there's a bunch of them in. In Halliburton,
and a lot of ones that aren't listed are their trade associations are listed.
Yeah.
So you won't find Monsanto on there, but their trade associations are on there.
Yeah.
You know, some of these that like Monsanto is like one of the most unpopular country in the world. So I don't think the U.S. trade representative wants Monsanto on that 600 corporate list. And these corporations, you know, get this trade agreement in live time on their computers and advise the trade representative how to change the words. And Congress can't see it. Media can't see it. We can't see it. It's pretty bizarre.
And we can protest Chamber of Commerce in every state.
Right, right. Right. So that's your point. That we tried to make that article called the Global Revolt. And this is such an overreach. This is such an egregious thing that they're doing, that this is truly our opportunity. If we reach out to the people around us and let them know what this is and how it's going to affect us, this is really our opportunity to mobilize together in solidarity and stop this. Did you want to say something?
Poster material for the rally
tomorrow. Nancy Price from the Alliance for Democracy. We've worked tirelessly to organize the rally tomorrow. Are we going to do those now?
Well, if anybody wants to do it afterwards, if there's materials here. Compliments of David Newby and the Wisconsin Fair Trade College.
Ellen Brown, our public bank, will be there tonight as well.
Yeah, we have Ryan on the
open. Kevin Zeese will be there too.
Thank you very much.
I just mentioned very quickly, if any of you are not